To understand what it meant to be a Hathaway, you'd first have to see our farm, Aurelia. If my family's name is familiar to you, it may be that you have either already seen it or at least know something of its reputation. In its day, our farm was notorious for being one of the most prosperous estates in our county in Iowa, an infamy only surpassed in time by that of the family who owned it. I have spent the past 17 years trying to forget it, forget my family and forget my past. For 17 years, I was given a reprieve, but after that length of time, you stop looking over your shoulder and you forget how precarious your peace is. You take it for granted. You learn to bury your guilt, and then you convince yourself that it will never find you. And then he died. My cousin, Caledon Hathaway Jr., left this earth in late October at the age of 45. The cause of death was cirrhosis of the liver. As seemed to be the curse of all Hathaway men after my grandfather, he would die young and alone, and how he was found I do not know. He lived with no one, and by then Aurelia had ceased to be a business, and had become merely a vast space of withering land. Though a notice was placed in the local newspaper, his death was mourned by no one, and his funeral attended only by the priest and an appointed lawyer from the firm who handled our family's assets. His body rested in the ground, at last unable to hurt or harm anyone else. And that should have been the end of it. But then, 8 months later, at 10 to 3 on a Thursday afternoon, I received a letter. I settled into my armchair next to the window, my hands still stained with streaks of clay from the morning's work in my studio. Ever since I left art school, I have dedicated myself to sculpture, though it has only been in the past 5 years that I have made a decent enough living from it in order to do it full-time. Before that, I was like any artist-cum-waitress, come every and any menial job you could find. I don't earn much, but I get by, and as I fingered through the array of bills and flyers, the stains of my morning's endeavors trailed across the envelopes until I came across a stark white one, different from the others in its weight and the crispness of its paper. It bore the mark of an eminent law firm whose name seemed familiar to me, but I thought nothing of it and slid open the mouth of the letter with my finger. Why wouldn't I? I had forgotten so much, or at least I had pretended to. By the time I had finished reading it, the damage had been done. I looked up from the typescript to find my apartment an alien place. Sunlight was streaming through the windows and reflecting off of the counter surfaces and wood floors. I could feel a prickle of sweat on the back of my neck, and my mouth tasted hot and sweet with what I realized was panic. I rushed to the bathroom and was violently sick. Pushing myself upright, I brought my hands to my face and then ran my fingers through my hair, clawing the strands back from my forehead. I caught sight of my phone, and even though my stomach was filled with dread, I had to know. I had to know if they have been told. The letter said that they had tried to contact other members of the family. Who else? Who else? I closed and reopened my eyes, but it was no use. As soon as I began the thought, they swam across my vision, the living and the dead, diluting the reality of my kitchen with memories I had striven to bury for nearly 2 decades. My grandmother in her caramel-colored gardening gloves pruning her roses, my father throwing water over his head to cool himself off so that his great mop of blonde hair slicked back, grazing the top of his shirt, Claudia in a white two-piece with her red sunglasses, my uncle Ethan shaking a cigarette out onto his palm from a pack of Lucky Strikes. I leapt away from the counter and ran into the studio. I darted around my sculptures to my desk and rooted through the drawers until I found the battered moleskin address book and flicked through the pages until I found her number.